WCLO Janesville Beloit.
We are honored once again to have us joining us by telephone, the chairman of the Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee and U.S. Senator Ron Johnson. Good morning, Senator Johnson.
Morning, Jim. How are you doing?
I am doing well, or at least as well as can be expected, given all the things going on in the nation these days. The general electorate, I think, is a little on edge these days.
Yeah, there's a lot of uncertainty, a lot of turmoil. And I guess what I've been trying to do as Chairman of Homeland Security is I've just been trying to lay out the reality of what we face here in this world, whether it's our debt and deficit, whether it's the threat of Islamic terror. It's a real threat. It's a growing threat. It's nothing that we can turn our face from. We have to face these very harsh realities. When we turn away from them, as we did after Islamic terrorists declared war on us, and at least dating back to the 90s when they first started bringing down the Twin Towers, we dealt with that as a law enforcement problem, and we end up with 9/11. So, I mean, this is a growing threat. I completely support President Obama's stated goal of degrading and ultimately defeating ISIS. I think where I have a difference with President Obama is the definition of ultimately. It's been 15 months since he declared that goal, and we have not contained ISIS, and now we've got the L.A. school system shut down, apparently a credible terrorist threat. I have no information on that, but this is more than disconcerting.
As your role on the Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee, Senator, what should Americans be afraid of, if anything, and what should we be diligent about? In other words, I just saw that news story come across, too, about the school districts in Los Angeles. Now any idiot can pick up a phone and call in a threat, and do we immediately have to give those credibility? How do we proceed in this sort of new world that many of us are facing for the first time here in the United States?
Of course, that's exactly the kind of economic disruption the terrorists are looking to create. It is, DHS has got their, if you see something, say something. You have to do that. You have to be aware. You can't be afraid of being accused of profiling. If you see something, you have to report to authorities. I don't know any other way of laying out that, particularly in today's age. But, what we need to do as a nation is we do have to defeat ISIS, because every day that they are not overtly losing, they're perceived as winning. They'll continue to inspire this kind of barbaric activity, this kind of terrorist activity. They'll continue to grow and gain adherence to this barbarity. Tim, one of the things I've done as Chairman of Homeland Security, we've laid out priorities: border security, cybersecurity, protecting our critical infrastructure, countering Islamic terrorists. But let's talk about border security. As I look at the threat situation, I think our greatest threat of allowing Islamic terrorists into this country to do us harm is from our unsecure borders. We need to tighten up our refugee program. We need to tighten up our waiver systems, or visa systems. But we absolutely need to secure our border, and on a bipartisan basis, that is a duty that has been shirked. We have not committed ourselves to doing really what the federal government can only do, is actually secure the homeland by securing our borders. We've held 13 hearings on the problem. It's an enormous problem, and our borders are not secure, and we have to commit ourselves to doing so.
There has certainly been a lot of talk about what our response should be, particularly in light of the radical terrorists, the radical Islamic terrorism that's out there, however we want to say it these days, and one of the shooters in the most recent incident was over here on a fiancé visa, as I understand it, so went through our current vetting process, and obviously didn't raise a flag, so. For us to say we have a good vetting process, which I've heard many people say we have one of the best in the nation, is this an indication that the best is not good enough, or is this an indication that no matter how good it is, on occasion one's going to slip through?
Well, a little both. I don't think you can design a perfect system. I think our system could be far better. For example, it's being reported now that Tashfeen Malik was very openly on social media, on Facebook, claiming that she was a part of this Islamic terror. She was very overt in her in her leanings, as was, by the way, Major Hassan, who slaughtered some of the finest among us at Fort Hood, Texas. And we ignore those warnings. You know, Tim, I come from the private sector. Right now we're telling our kids, be careful what you post on Facebook, because when future employers are going to look to hire you, they're going to go to your Facebook accounts or your Facebook pages, and they're going to see what you're posting out there as part of their evaluation of whether they want to hire you. Are we not, in terms of our visa system, in terms of the State Department, are we not checking Facebook as we let people coming in from countries, let's face it, that do harbor Islamic terrorists? I mean, we ought to have our antennas way up. We ought to be checking not only the databases with the terror watch list, the no-fly list, Interpol, intelligence agencies, and police and public safety officials in those countries, but we ought to be looking at social media as well and take a look at their Facebook postings. And apparently with this Ms. Malik, we did not do that. There's one area right there we can strengthen up our visa systems. So, no, it's not a perfect system. I don't think you'll ever design a perfect system, but I think we can do a far better job. And that is my, that is what I'm taking on the responsibility, is to fully review what's gone wrong, not only with the San Bernardino, but past terrorist accounts. What could have we known? What can we do to tighten up all these systems?
You know that Mr. Trump has basically said out there, we need to stop Muslims from coming here right now. And he does say temporarily, and I think that that's a point that many of the pundits miss. He said, let's basically pause this and do, largely as you just suggest, review what we've got. Is it proper, however, to refer to that plan and stopping it only for a particular group, whether it's an ethnicity or a religion or a gender, or is it better to say, Senator, that, look, we've got people being radicalized of all different faiths and creeds and ethnic backgrounds now. We just need to be 100% certain that anybody coming through on the visa system or any other sort of immigration system has been properly vetted. It makes no difference whether they're Muslim or Christian or black or white or anything like that.
Yes. I mean, I think we need to do, again, is take a look at all the tools we use to vet, all the databases, and see what we can do to strengthen those, to improve them, potentially expand the number of databases like social media. I mean, you would have thought we were doing that, but we weren't. It doesn't sound like we are. We'll find out. But, again, we need to protect ourselves. I think it is very legitimate, and, this is part of a bill that I hope will be passed in the omnibus in terms of tightening up our visa waiver systems. Take a look at individual countries that are hotbeds for terrorist activity and not allowing, those individuals come through some of the visa waiver processes, or certainly have a far more robust vetting process there. But, I mean, the reality, Tim, is in 2013, there were 173 foreign visitors to the United States. About 110 of those came from Canada and Mexico, so they're exempt from having to get a visa. That leaves 60 million people coming into America going through some kind of visa process, and we have literally dozens of different types of visas. Our waiver process affects about 20 million of those, and all that waives, by the way, is an interview with a consulate official. But think of how robust can an interview be, literally, when you're interviewing 40 million people coming to this country. My guess is an awful lot of those interviews are pre-perfunctory, which is why the visa waiver system actually goes into databases, has threshold agreements with those countries in terms of their own intelligence and information sharing with those countries. So the visa waiver program actually improves the system, but again, it's not perfect. It needs to be improved. But Tim, getting back to the main point, we'll never have a perfect system, so you got to go to the root cause. And right now, the root cause, the biggest threat in terms of Islamic terror groups literally is ISIS. And, of course, we have the threat that as long as ISIS is growing, Al-Qaeda's sitting back going, they've taken up some of our sunshine, and all of a sudden you start getting competition between terrorist groups, which is also a growing danger. So we can't just focus on one. We definitely need to defeat ISIS. We got to take back that territory so we can destroy that caliphate, which is very inspirational to more people around the globe, unfortunately. But we can't let Al-Qaeda, slip through our fingers either, nor any other of these affiliated groups. Do you realize there are reports that ISIS has affiliated groups in more than 30 countries? That shows you how this is metastasizing and growing.
I think that's astounding, and it is I think a worry that a lot of people have. And you bring up a good point, Senator, in that you know it's kind of the while you weren't looking, and really, you know, you got to go back a decade or so. But while we were so focused on Al Qaeda because of 9/11 and rooting them out, and all the other things that happened, we allowed a vacuum to form, so to speak, where ISIS kind of grew unnoticed for a long time. And
what happened, Tim, is, again, very unfortunately, this is a historic blunder. After the hard-fought gains, you know, after the service and sacrifice of so many in Iraq, you know, we bugged out. President Obama declared a huge success in 2011. He left. He pulled the stabilizing force of America out of the Middle East. And so ISIS was able to rise from the ashes of what was a thoroughly defeated al-Qaeda in Iraq. And, of course, we allowed Syria to spin completely out of control. There's a failed state. So, you know, Islamic terrorists are looking for failed states where they can operate, where they can grow. And, of course, ISIS claimed territory and declared this caliphate, and that's even more dangerous, which is why I agree with President Obama's goal of defeating ISIS. He's just not doing it. He's not containing them. He's not leading the committed coalition of the willing that it's going to take with, by the way, troops on the ground. You cannot defeat ISIS. You cannot regain territory strictly from bombing from the air. You actually need troops on the ground. America has to lead. It's got to be a coalition comprised of troops from the Arab states and other NATO partners, but we need the civilized world to take this seriously. We need full commitment from everybody to do this, and we don't have it yet.
Well, I did find it interesting that I think just yesterday it was the president was addressing this and talked about the amount of bombing, and that you know we keep increasing the amount of bombing, and we've had something like 9,000 runs now since this has begun. Yet we don't seem to see a whole lot of degradation, if you will, yet. Maybe some. To suggest that we're anywhere near defeating this group would be an overstatement at the very least.
Tim, you know, a malady I see in Washington, D.C. is just the denying of reality across the board, whether it's debt and deficit or whether it's ISIS. And, of course, you know, President Obama famously referred to ISIS as the JV team. The morning before the Paris attack, he said we had ISIS contained. No, we don't. I mean, he knows that. His intelligence agencies are telling him that they are growing affiliates throughout the world. And so it's that denial of reality. And right now, President Obama continues to deny the reality that we can. The reality is we can't defeat ISIS. We will not regain that territory without ground troops. You can't do it from the air. But, you know, he's, again, I think, deluding himself and the American public, thinking that by stepping up air campaigns, we're going to actually defeat ISIS. We won't. He is going to need a ground contingent. But again, what I've been pointing out is the model of George H.W. Bush in the first Gulf War. He assembled a truly committed coalition of the willing. People have kind of forgotten this, but our coalition partners provided a third of the troop strength. And I'm not suggesting these numbers, but this is the numbers of committed coalition troops in the first Gulf War, 250,000. Our partners paid for 85% of that effort. That is a committed coalition of the willing. Only America can assemble that. Only America can lead that effort. And we're not assembling it, and we're not leading, which is why ISIS is not contained, why ISIS has not been defeated in 15 months since President Obama stated that goal.
Well, going to continue to be a huge problem. I want to ask you about another sort of homeland security issue, and that is this idea that the president has floated. And I believe one governor has now enacted through executive authority this idea that if you're on a no-fly list, you shouldn't be able to purchase a firearm. And I think we need a little depth in definition of that. How does one get on a no-fly list, and why would it be something that people would be opposed to? If we think you might carry a bomb onto a plane, why would we want to allow you to own a firearm?
Well, first of all, nobody really knows. That's kind of a deep secret. So nobody really knows what qualifies you to go on the first. And there's real confusion between the two lists. There's a terrorist watch list, which is a much larger list. And I think there's all kinds of famous examples of people being included on that obviously are not, you know, potentially terrorists. And then they have a very difficult time getting off. And so the no-fly list is a subset of the terrorist watch list. First thing people need to understand is more than 95% of people on the no-fly list and the terrorist watch list either are foreigners, you know, they're not they're not American citizens or legal residents. So more than 95% of the people on those lists already cannot buy a gun because they're not eligible to, because they're not citizens or legal residents. So again, this is being blown way out of proportion, but the problem is the lists are not accurate. And there's no due process for if you're on that list and you're denied any constitutional right, there's no due process to get you off the list. So that's the first thing. The list is very flawed. There's no due process. But again, to just calm everybody down, the vast majority, more than 95% of people on those lists are already ineligible for obtaining a weapon in the U.S. because they're not U.S. citizens or legal residents. So again, this is being politicized, unfortunately. A lot of demagoguery around this issue, which is unfortunate.
All right. One other point before I let you go. Christian Schneider in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel the other day wrote an op-ed piece and said basically you have a Trump problem, that if Donald Trump were to continue to be the front runner and ultimately gain the nomination, that would be disastrous for your reelection campaign. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, first of all, Tim, I'm no political pundit. I'm an accountant. I'm a manufacturer from Oshkosh, Wisconsin that ran for Senate, and I'm a senator. Now I'm chairman of the Senate Committee on Homeland Security and Government Affairs. I'll let other people do the punditry. I'm just doing my job. I'm taking this very serious responsibility. I'm doing everything I can to keep this nation safe. So I'll let other people do the political punditry. I'm just going to do my job.
If your job continues, Senator, and I realize we're speculating, but and Donald Trump were to become president, does Donald Trump have the ability to keep the nation safe?
Well, right now, I think a lot of people that are supporting him believe him to be a pretty strong leader. Somebody who's been able to get things done. I mean, we'll let the voters decide, you know, who they're going to elect first of all as a Republican nominee and then as the president. I can only be responsible for my own comments and my own thoughts. But, you know, from my standpoint, this chairmanship is a big responsibility, and it does put me at the center of, you know, actually being able to accomplish things. And Tim, this is, I say this all the time, it's good news when a train doesn't derail, it's just not news. I'm creating an awful lot of good news with my chairmanship. We've passed 55 pieces of legislation out of my committee. 12 of those have already been signed into law. Right now, unfortunately, because of partisanship, we did report out a border metrics bill, kind of the first step in securing the border. Let's get the information. I wrote it with the Secretary of Homeland Security. It's supported by the Secretary. It's being blocked right now by the Democrat Senate members of the Gang of Eight on immigration reform because it's not comprehensive. That is ridiculous. We have got to start securing our border. This is a first small little step of getting the information we need to do so. That's how I'm approaching this thing. I'm going to do my job. I'm going to take a step-by-step approach. I'm going to accomplish things by finding areas of agreement that unify us as a committee, as a Senate, as a nation. And I just refuse to exploit our divisions. This is a time where this nation has to heal, where it has to come together, because we face serious threats. We've got to come together.
All right, Senator Johnson, we certainly appreciate all the work you are doing in that vein and your work as a senator. Thanks very much for your time this morning.
Have a great day and have a very Merry Christmas.
You as well, Senator. Merry Christmas.